Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Eating Alone in My Car show with your host. So sad today. Today I am having laughing cow cheese again. I have been traveling, hence no episode last week. You know, I like to keep you guys guessing. Actually, that's not even true. I just have been, lazy and tired. And so I was traveling. I was like doing a bunch of family shit. And then I was in New York, and then I drove up to the Berkshires to do my whole sock thing. It's been 6 months since the Starbucks cup piss episode, which I can't even believe. Time flies when you're pissing in a Starbucks cup. And I had thought about maybe doing one like on the way up to the Berkshires. And then I just didn't feel like speaking to anyone because I'd been doing so much speaking, to like family. We were seeing my husband's mom. Then I was with my family. Then I was in New York, you know, and then I was going to have like multiple days of being like with a lot of people all day, every day, a lot for me. So even speaking, to myself alone in the car seemed like a lot of speaking. And thus I was like, you know what? They can deal. I mean, I felt a couple people on Twitter were like, no podcast this week. And I was like, oh God, I have let them down. But then, you know, I tried to tell myself it's sort of like B.F. Skinner and, the rats, you know, B.F. Skinner, the rat and the conditioning scientist dude, you know, like old school, like psych 101. So B.F. Skinner and the rat. So he would do the thing where he'd like give them the sugar water and they'd press down on the lever. And, but there was a thing that he did, which really sums up, my entire personality, especially when it comes to, hot people not texting me back, which is, I believe it was called operant, or it was something about conditioning schedules, where if he gave the rats the sugar water at the same time, every day, you know, if there was a consistency in his feeding schedule, you know, they pressed on the lever when they wanted the sugar water, but they didn't go like ham. But if he varied the schedule, so sometimes they didn't, these poor fucking rats, I feel really bad for them. But so sometimes, but I have no compassion for myself. Like, I'm like, I feel bad for the rats, but not for me. But if he gave them sugar water at like different times and would skip a feeding, the rats would go fucking crazy. They'd go ham on the lever and they'd be like banging on it. Hence, it's sort of like, you know, if someone texts you back consistently, you're like, okay, fine, cool. You know, but if you're like waiting for a text, you're like, you know, you're gonna feel like you want it so much more. And I actually think that those, what are those people called? PUA? The pickup artists? The PUA? I think they use B.F. Skinner's theory of operant, and, you know, whatever it's called, shifting conditioning schedules to kind of, fuck with their targets. You know, they use like those basic psychological principles. But so, so that is actually, it is not what I was not trying to PUA this shotcast audience. I was not trying to be like, well, they're going to want me more if I skip a week. But because I felt guilty about skipping a week, I sort of rationalized it to myself. I sort of brought in the rats in my mind and was like, there. Soothe yourself with, you know, soothe your fear of, people not liking you with B.F. Skinner's rats. I'm not an effortless PUA. I'm not. I'm the opposite. I'm the opposite. So, nonetheless, I'm back. I'm back with a snack. And today, I am having an imported cheese. It is a cheese that has traveled very far. It is the Laughing Cow. However, it is Laughing Cow white cheddar and Laughing Cow Gouda. Now, they don't make the Gouda, and I put these in quotation marks. It's still triangle-shaped. It's not, you know, it just tastes slightly more like butt than the normal Laughing Cow I eat, which is either like the Laughing Cow Swiss Light, or it's weird because there's Laughing Cow Swiss, which is 50 cows. Then there's Laughing Cow Swiss Light, which is 30 cows. Love. That's my like huge. But then like the French onion and the Gouda and all these other ones aren't listed as light, but they're still 30 cows, which, you know, that's great for me. But so in Los Angeles, they don't have the white cheddar and the Gouda. We've got the French onion, we've got the garlic and herb, but so these fine cheeses, traveled far across the country from the Berkshires where I purchased them, a week since I purchased them. They were in my hotel mini fridge for a few days. And then they were in my hot carry-on bag as I flew back. And now they're here. You know, it's like they've done their time. When I was flying back, so the reason why I'm in the Berkshires, for those who aren't, old school fans of the show, and by old school, I mean like 6 months ago. So I, as a side hustle, one of my jobs is that I write socks and gums and dish towels and funny things for this company based in the Berkshires, Blue Q, wonderful people. And I feel like that just sounded very Donald Trump. I'm like, wonderful people. But they're really great. But so I go up there every 6 months for sort of a sock and gum and et cetera writing intensive. So I go to the Berkshires every 6 months. And I usually fly into New York, drive up there, and then fly home. But so it's me and a couple of other writers who fly in. We've become friends. And one of the other writers, we were at the airport together and we went through security together. And security decided to go through my snacks. They thought that I was, I guess, the Laughing Cow cheese bomber. And it was, I have to say, you know, for as close as I get with these people, and it's professional, so, you know, it's not that, like, I show various, like, I'll show certain sides of myself, you know, like, I'll show certain vulnerabilities, particularly because it's in the writing that I do, you know, like, I'm constantly wanting them to do an anxiety sock. I think we're doing an I Heart Crying sock, but anyway, I digress. So, but, like, you know, there's also certain aspects, namely my bizarre eating habits, you know, like, I don't really want them knowing that I, like, the first thing I do is stop at the Big Y supermarket or Price Chopper when I get there and, like, get a certain amount of snacks and, like, load up my fridge. Or that, like, you know, every night I have to get, like, the Halo Top from CVS. Some of the writers know that. But, because sometimes they're with me. But, like, I don't want them to know that I have it every night. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can sort of rationalize. Like, I don't know. It's like, I just need something that's mine. You know? It's like, let the weird food rituals be mine. And so when I was going, but I was going through security with this other writer, and I had this like plastic bag of all my snacks in my carry-on, and like it wasn't terrible, it could have been a lot worse, but it was just a strange melange. Like, it was like probably between 35 and 60 packets of Equal, Splenda, and Truvia that I had accrued on the road. So some taken from my hotel room, some taken from various Starbucks, you know, and like, of course, security had to pull out like every packet. So now this fellow writer knows like just how deep I am in the faux sweetener game, you know, like then that I sort of carry around while I'm, that, you know, I've invested in this like pinata of faux sweeteners on the road. Like, that's just a little strange. There were about 9 Quest bars, which is fine, but the thing with that is the night before we had gone to CVS together, and I had been like, oh, I'm going to buy 2 Quest bars for the flight home. Like, not mentioning the fact that I already had, like, 7 stored away in my bag. So I just, it sort of felt like, it reminded me of when I was in my active alcoholism and I used to, like, I would have my, like, pint of vodka at home, like usually 180 proof before I got to the bar, and then I'd get to the bar and have a drink and I'd seem a little like tipsy and I'd be like, oh yeah, you know, I just like I started and I had 1 drink. You know, that's how I felt with the protein bars. Like I was getting 2, but I already had like 9 of them stockpiled. I don't know how to not stockpile, you know, like when it comes to that stuff. I just need to know that I have my shit with me. You know, that I'll be taken care of when it comes to my sweeteners and my protein bars. So there was that. But then the kind of weirdest part was the 2 wheels of Laughing Cow Cheese, which were both like open and they sort of like lifted up the lid. And I'm like, ugh, like now she knows I'm traveling with like warm, like Gouda and white cheddar Laughing Cow Cheeses. Like, it just felt a little, like, it just felt like, here's something you don't know about me. Like, I travel with, like, half wheels of Gouda and white cheddar Laughing Cow Cheese. And then the other weird one was I had gotten some of my light English muffins. And I had, like, taken out, like, I had eaten them over the week, but there were, like, 3 left. So I took them back with me. And I had, like, taken out the cardboard part. But there were just like 3 muffins in the bag, and then I couldn't find the tie, so I had it like tied together with a hair rubber band. Like it just felt so intimate, you know? Like I really felt like I was being seen naked, like my soul, you know, like parts of my soul were being revealed that I was not planning on being revealed. And the other element too, I think why I felt so vulnerable is because not only was I on display, but you know, like I wasn't sure at first, like just how many things were going to be taken out of the plastic bag by security and like padded down, you know, like we were waiting for them to like do this check. And like, I, you know, first they took out some of the protein bars and I was like, okay, they're just going to take out a couple. Then they took out more. Then like all of the packets came out. Then out came like the muffins. Then out came like the Laughing Cow and like, you know, lids were lifted. Each triangle was caressed. And it was just like, I was like, well, I guess that's it. You know, like I felt it was a gradual exposure. And it was also very much beyond my control. And also it was being sort of, it was like my things, my personal things were being caressed and my cheeses were being felt up by TSA. So needless to say, the cheeses made it across the country, you know, 6 hours on a warm plane back into my fridge at home. And now here they are in the car with me for snack time with you. So even though I didn't do an episode, I've always wanted to have like a book event at Taco Bell, like a signing or a meetup. Taco Bell really has my heart, you know? I mean, there's a couple of places, Panda and Taco Bell are probably the pinnacle of my love. And, when I was going to be in New York, while I was in my parents' house, prior to going to New York, I was like, you know what? I was sort of in this place where I was in my childhood bedroom and feeling like the sort of the compulsivity and the impulsivity that comes. Whenever I'm going to be alone in my childhood bedroom, I know there's going to be like mountain of tweets. Like there's going to be a binge tweeting session and, I'm going to end up deleting half of them. Even when I go in and I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to like read my old fucking, this old copy of like Emily Dickinson's letters from college that are saying like, no, like there will be binge tweeting. There will be, this time I was tweeting some shit from my diary. I don't know, you know, from high school. I don't know what was going on, but it's just, cause it's like, I need to get high, you know, and I really don't have anything left, that I can use. And so, I was in there and then I had this idea because I've always wanted to do a Taco Bell book event. And because when I go to New York, I usually do an event and I hadn't planned anything. I was like, okay, I'm going to schedule, let's do Sunday. So it was last Sunday, I decided to do like a Taco Bell meetup and book signing, like just have people go by the Strand and get my books if they didn't have them, or just bring shit they already had and come hang out. And it was actually cool. It was like people came, we hung out at the Taco Bell near Union Square. We played like Fuck, Marry, Kill with Taco Bell, McDonald's, and I don't know, maybe Arby's. I met a girl, shout out to the girl whose family owns three Arby's, like has a three Arby franchise. It made me think a lot about my future, and that while Arby's would not be my choice, I would love to have some kind of franchise restaurant. You know, that might be a good future step for me. I don't know if I would do Subway. I don't, because if I ever have to like work, you know, because I would probably have employees. I don't think I'd be like the only employee, but I'm sure that sometimes I'd be behind the counter, and I don't like the counting of the meats. I think I'd be very good at it. I feel like my entire life has been counting meats, for myself, you know, slices, or chunks, or like, okay, 22 Skittles is this many calories, but I don't know that I want to be counting out the meats for others. I also think Panda would be a little too labor intensive, because Panda, while I love Panda's revamp with all the vegetables, it seems like there'd be a lot of chopping. So I think Taco Bell feels like it would be about right. Like that someday maybe a Taco Bell franchise. I mean, that would be really fucking cool. The only thing about having a franchise, though, is I think there's a lot of rules, like, because it's still sort of, like, you have to comply with, like, the company shit. And I kind of feel, like, done with, like, having a corporate overlord telling me what to do, you know, besides, like, every other corporate overlord that's telling me what to do in my daily life, you know, and, like, you know, just basically because the country is run by corporations. It's so funny. Like, everyone's been freaking out about the Mueller situation. There were, like, people, like, lighting prayer candles and shit. And I'm just like, the company's kind of run by the company. Yeah, exactly. The country's kind of run by corporations anyway. Like, I'm just like, I don't really have faith that, like, anything is going to change one way or the other. Like, it's just, I don't know. Maybe my cynicism is, not asked for, and this is why I don't talk about, well, there's many reasons why I don't talk about politics that often, namely because, like, everyone else seems to be doing it, I don't know that my voice is necessary to be added to the fray. I think my voice and platform are much more valuable to speak up about things like laughing couchies. I think that is where I'm needed. You know, it's like bloom where you're planted, or go where you're, be where you're needed. You know, that's my need, the need. My philanthropic efforts are best used, when it, you know, to talk about, triangles of cheese. But I don't know, I'm cynical, you know, I am a cynical bitch, and that's just how it is. So I'm just like, I don't know that anything will change anything. And, you know, I will still be probably having my shit auto shipped from Amazon while talking about, you know, how Amazon is destroying everything independent. Like, that's just what it is. I feel, you know, I will be talking about socialism, not really, but like a little bit, you know, or thinking of my visual, thinking, you know, I'm a Starbucks carrying socialist. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll be at Whole Foods, like, talking about, like, the dystopic future is now. Like, it's just, my role is looking at my own hypocrisy. My role is looking within, I guess. I don't really know what my role is. Maybe I don't even have a role. You know, like, maybe it's not necessary for me to, you know, even really exist. But I'm here. And what can I tell you? I've been thinking, though, I have been thinking a lot about B.F. Skinner's Rats. One reason why I was thinking about it was a friend of mine was very excited about, like, a potential Hollywood project that they thought was going to happen, and then she didn't get it, and she was really upset. She sort of knew in doing, like, the Hollywood stuff,
And I think she got, like, excited before it was, like... I mean, really, I think you can only get excited with Hollywood things, like, maybe, like, after something has happened. And then, like, you know, you're just worrying about the next thing. But it's, like, truly, there's so many variables in the arts out here. I mean, more, I think, than, like, any arts I've been... You know, definitely more than the literary world. Like, the literary world, it's, like, you know, a publisher, like, buys your book and... It is going to be published, you know, unless you get canceled and then uncanceled and then canceled again. I'm obsessed with uncanceled. I find uncanceled hilarious that people are getting uncanceled. Like, he's canceled. No, wait, he's uncanceled. No, he's canceled again. But so she... but anyway, but you know, in book publishing, it's like, okay, you get your advance and then you're like, all right, but in Hollywood, someone buying something like means nothing or someone being interested, it doesn't mean anything, you know, like it's like very like the step, you just, the only thing you can, that is for sure, is I guess like the step that has just happened, you know, there's many steps of the, cause there's so many like chefs in the kitchen and like many annoying chefs too. And so I was talking with her, though, about how she had really turned this project and the hope of this project almost into, like, a potential lover or, like, really someone that she was waiting for a text back from, you know? Like, and, I mean, with Hollywood, like, I tend to always, because it is so, like, uncountable and because there are so many, like, things that can and do go wrong, I always treat Hollywood like a douche bro. I see Hollywood very much like a douche bro. I don't text it. I don't call it. I don't check in on it. I do not let it reflect anything really about me. Like, I don't, you know, when, if I sell something or if something's like, you know, I have like 80, like there's always like 8 different like irons and fires and you just never know, but I don't let any of those, I don't see any of those as like fait accompli's. I just sort of, because it's like I'm way too like insecure and sensitive a person that like I can't let any of that shit like be the basis for my self-esteem. I'm like, I must always bear in mind Hollywood is douche bro. If it asks me to go on a date, I'll walk through the door. You know, if it wants to do something with me, fine. But, like, I do not pursue, and I try not to rest my sanity on hearing back. But I can certainly identify with letting other arts, and, you know, I mean, most recently for me, it's with these novels that I'm still now, like, figuring out which one is going to be the right one, and one of them's out of the weeds. I don't know. It's a whole fucking thing now. Like, I decided the one that had been in the weeds might not be actually the right one to go forward with next. I don't really know. But then the other one will probably be weeds. But so I get it. Like, while for whatever reason in Hollywood, I'm able like to, with the screenwriting things that I do, like I'm able to sort of divorce my sense of self from it. I also think it's because I like books better than movies and TV. You know, like, I don't think I really have that much respect. I don't know. I probably should. Whatever. I'm going to get in trouble for saying this. But it's like, with books, like, I'm like, this actually means something. But with movies and TV, it's much rarer that I'm, like, moved. Or when I was on the plane, I watched the Leonardo DiCaprio Great Gatsby. I had never seen that. It was, like, one of the movies they were showing. I knew better. You know, I knew. First of all, I was like, this. Okay. Anytime I watch anything with, like, Leonardo DiCaprio or someone mildly attractive and longing, like, a love longing, no matter how good or bad the movie is, like, I will be emotionally hungover after. And, like, I was, you know, all pangs, pangs all day yesterday, pangs this morning of, why do I feel this, like, love and this wistfulness? And then it's like, oh, yeah, I watched The Great Gatsby. But, dude, that thing was shitty. I don't know, man. Like, I mean, some of, like, the sort of, it was, like, pretty, but I was, like... It was like kind of, it was cheesy, right? It was like kind of corny. Doesn't mean that it didn't totally fuck me up, but I am like a very available target for that. But it was kind of corny. But anyway, while I'm able to sort of mostly like divorce my sense of self from like this Hollywood validation, like good or bad, and usually it's rejection, like, you know, I'd say 90% of the time. there are other areas, you know, waiting, I think, for any kind of like artistic achievement, for news, right? Like that we can make this sort of potential news, right? The fantasy of a future, what our future will be, into sort of like this lover or person that we are from whom we are waiting for a text. And we can kind of turn it into like, it is like the fucking rats, you know, because it's like, first of all, it changes our state, right? Like when the potential of something good happening artistically, it's like, it's kind of like there's that same state as when we think, oh my God, this person's interested in me. I like them so much, you know, or oh my God, I like this person so much. I hope they like me back. It is that titillation. I don't know which like hormone it is or which brain chemical it is that gets released. I mean, there's definitely some dopamine. I know that. There's definitely some serotonin. I know that. Maybe a little adrenaline, but there's a lot of shit. There is a cocktail, and that cocktail is fucking delicious. And it is drugs. I also think like we can sort of like, I know that I can kind of make my whole world and whole concept of self about it. You know what I'm saying? Like I can forget that there's ever been anything else good or that there is anything else good in my life. And I can sort of just reduce like my whole world around like, am I going to get this or not? And if I do, then I am great. And if I don't, then I am a loser. You know, it's like in the same way that like we can, I mean, I don't think all people do this at all, but those who are sort of, I guess this episode's really for those people, it's not for everybody. It's not for those with, you know, a great self-esteem and balance all the time, but you probably wouldn't be like listening to this fucking shodcast if you were like, you know, believed in yourself. Which, and you know what, I'm glad you don't, because honestly, the people who believe in themselves, I'm like, those are the fucking people who are destroying the world. You know, it's us non-believers who are sort of like holding things down. But, so I digress. But you know, this episode's really, I had this whole thought when my friend was saying, like, she felt like she had finally gotten a handle in her life on the ways that she sort of made guys into like her God, you know, or would base her whole conception of self upon like what some fucking dude thought of her. But now she felt like she was doing the exact same thing with this like Hollywood network, you know, like she was like literally like if this happens, then I am okay. And if this doesn't happen, then I am not okay. And it just like was totally eclipsing, you know, she had reduced her whole self concept, her whole life to like whether this thing happened, when in reality, like this thing would have been cool, but it was not the be all end all. She has like other things going for her in her life, even like career wise. And so it was also like it was sort of like when you can forget there's other like fish in the sea, you know, like when you make everything about like one person and you're like, this is the last place or person that is like ever going to love me, you know, like this is the last, like you sort of just like you forget not only that your entire self-conception is not about this, but that there's like plenty of other possibilities or like opportunities. Like this is not it. You know, I think anything that we make the alpha and the omega, like I always know, well, I don't know, but whenever like I'm like, I've said this before on the show, like whenever I feel like I have to make something happen, that's actually when I need to pause. That's when I'm going to be getting myself into trouble, you know, because I'm acting out of like fear of not being enough. Like when I'm like, this must happen, that is when it's like not a good place. And I think the same can be said when I'm like, this is the only thing. I can get very myopic about a lot of things, you know, but about achievement in particular, you know, and again, like not for me, not really Hollywood, but just like definitely like literary things. Like I can get very myopic and it's just like, this is the only thing. And anytime I'm like, this is the only thing or this defines me, like that's a bad place to be in. And I feel like it's always such a miracle to have that shift in perception where I'm like, wait, oh my God, it's not, this is not the only thing, or this is not the only person. But it's almost, it's like a sickness. It's like hypnotic, you know, like you get entranced. Because I think the world is complex And I think it's very similar to, you know, for those who listen to this show who have had like an eating disorder, you know, it's like the same way that the complexity and challenges and confusion of the world with an eating disorder, it's like, well, at least I can control, I mean, the illusion of control, but at least I can have the illusion of control of this one thing. When we reduce like our whole self-concept to like one achievement happening, it makes it simpler. It makes it feel like, okay, like I'm not, like I can kind of know who I am. Like, all right, I can know who I am. Like if this happens, good. If not, bad. Even though once the achievement happens, then it's like we just want more. You know, like there's never enough. But, you know, it's very challenging. And I think being in the arts, it can be very challenging because there's also that fantasy element, you know, and I think also because like the arts are so, the arts. Who am I? Am I like the, like a grant society? I'm like the arts, but you know, like being an artist or a writer, like it is really personal. It does sort of feel like this extension of oneself. You know, so it's not, you know, we literally, it's like, I'm like, bitch, I am the rat, you know, like that sugar water, like is going to keep me alive. But I don't know. I remember I had this one experience years ago. There's an expression that rejection is the universe's protection. And I mean, I know that can kind of feel like when something doesn't happen, that can feel like shitty consolation, you know, or like people are just trying to make you feel better. You know, it can almost be along the lines of like what's meant to be, you know, it's meant to like fuck that shit. But I was talking to my friend about this experience that I had years ago when I was just writing poetry. I don't even think my first book had come out. It was a long time ago, maybe almost 10 years ago. There was this opportunity. I got Oprah Magazine. Oh, the Oprah Magazine contacted me, which now I've been in some magazines. So like that doesn't seem as like huge of a thing, but in that moment, that was like huge to be in Oh, the Oprah Magazine. Like, dude, you know, that would have been like my first national magazine. And it was like, really, and they were doing this fashion, poets and fashion thing. And they wanted me to come into the office and like try on some shit. And they wanted to read some of my work, to possibly have me be in this article. It was going to be like three or four poets, like, writing, you know, they would talk about their work. I think it was for Valentine's Day or something. I don't really know, but. And they were gonna, and we would be like featured in this magazine, our work and us, and we would also be like wearing clothes. So I went in and I like did the try on the clothes. It was very exciting. Because also at that point, like I was, you know, I was a book publicist and I was doing that kind of thing like for and with my authors, but I'd never done that for myself. So I felt like really special and really cool. And it was going to be like really nice exposure, I thought, for my writing and stuff. And I went and tried on the clothes. Anyway, needless to say, I did not get it. They did not want me. I did not hear from them. And then it didn't happen. And I was like really upset. Like I felt really, sad. I guess, and just disappointed and like a loser. You know, I was like, did they not how I looked in the clothes, or did they not like my writing? Like what about me was wrong for it? You know? And I was really like, I was like mad and sad. And I remember I was very disappointed, very disappointed. And then a couple of months later, the piece came out. And it was like the dumbest fucking thing. I actually think one of my good friends was, since then, somebody who's a good friend of mine now was in that. I don't remember exactly, but, if she was, but I'm thinking maybe she was, but it was so stupid. It was like poets and fashion. Like why are poets doing fashion? And it got like ripped by like I say this in quotation marks, the poetry community, but like people were just like, what is this shit? This is so fucking stupid. Like, why are they having poets modeling? What does it have to do with poetry? And it was also just like the discussion of poetry, and it was like so cursory, you know, like it was so just, it was crappy. You know, it was like, it was a magazine. It was like a women's magazine take on like, you know, it was just shitty. And I was like so fucking glad that I had not been in this thing. So I went from being like so disappointed to really truly feeling like rejection was the universe's protection. And I remember that when I was trying to make myself feel better, when I was disappointed, I was like, well, universe is, you know, like rejection is the universe's protection. Like it's fine. But it actually ended up being very, very true. Like I didn't have to be part of this thing, which then I would have felt like shitty about. And it would have been so. I think about that from time to time when, like, I don't get something that I think I have to have, you know, when I don't get something. And I'm not saying that I truly believe that, like, rejection is always the universe's protection. I'm sure there are plenty of things that I have not gotten that I've wanted that, like, would have been really cool. But it is helpful to always, it does help when my perspective becomes so reductive and myopic that it's like, this is the only thing, or this is the only person, or this will make me real or valid or whole or whatever. Because anytime you say that, it's that is already like fucked, right? That's already fucked. It has been helpful for me to have this experience to look back on and be like, well, you don't really know. Like, you don't really know exactly what the experience will be like. You don't really know. You don't know. It could be, like, it could be great, but it could be like a fucking piece of shit photo spread, which pays, like, no, you know, like, it could be shit, you know? And this is what I said to my friend, you know, and I was just like, look, you don't know. And you don't know what's around the corner either. So, you know, this is an optimistic one. I'd say this is a very optimistic episode. But I've been thinking a lot about that, and I wanted to just talk about it because, you know, there are some of us who sort of, it can feel like playing whack-a-mole with sort of like our, I don't want to say demons, but with our like self-esteem stuff, you know, like you can kind of get a handle on it in one area of your life. You know, there's like romance and there's, money and there's achievement and, you know, there's all these different areas to feel less than, you know, and there's physicality and there's social interaction. And especially when you're younger, there's like friendships and things. I don't mean there's not friendships when you're older, but just like the caring what friends, like I remember, I don't know, just when I was younger, it was so important to me, like what the group thought, you know. Now it's like a lot less important, but thank God. One of the nice things about being old and disgusting. But so it's just like there's so many areas that it can pop up, but it's usually the same feeling, you know. It's the same feeling of like not enoughness and loserdom and feeling like sort of like I'm building my whole world around this thing. And if it doesn't happen, I'm nothing. And if it does happen, I'm great. But really, you know, of course, we all know great for 2 seconds. And then you're just like, what's next? So I wanted to just talk about that, you know. So consider this a PSA. Anyway, back in action. The shod's back. And no foreseeable blips to our regularly scheduled programming. You'll be a bunch of very happy and happy sugar water drinking rats, and you will be able to press very gently on the bar or the Apple refresh, and I will see you on the flip side. Thank you for listening to the Shodcast. Bye-bye.